You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ursula Barton. She is the owner of Jailbreak Studios, which is at 910 Southeast Taylor in the Central East Side. And she's here to talk about her art and the new collective that Jailbreak is becoming. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'd never heard of this place until I went to Lolo Pass Hostel and Hotel. They have an art gallery, and I said, who does your art? Jailbreak Studios, right? So, you know, I came around, and you're in this building, you know, Central East Side, 9th and Taylor, and I'd never even noticed it before. You know, we're in that kind of zone of warehouses, sort of breweries.
Yeah.
And here you are. So your studio is here. You do your artwork, which is ink on paper and canvas, and then you're also selling other people's art and sort of clothes and things like that. So just tell us what kind of artist you are and then why you're becoming a collective.
I've been mostly doing cityscapes and focused on the bridges of Portland, and then have been expanding into multi-city cityscapes where I'm combining multiple cities, mostly for transplants who want to feel connected to where they came from and where they live now. But I also do portraiture, figurative work, and abstracts for myself. But I mostly work large. I've been doing murals for 6 years. And once you start working really big, it's hard to go back down to small pieces. So a majority of my private commissions are now large canvas pieces, like around 4 feet.
We're looking at one of your works in progress. It's a canvas, right? I think you've primed it. You're working, it's the Fremont Bridge, just the kind of D-shaped part, the top arch, nothing else. And then to the left, you've done forests, but you have this kind of splash technique, different kind of splashes creating, you know, fir trees and deciduous trees. On the right, you've put in some Portland buildings, the Convention Center, Twin Towers, that dome thing over in the Lloyd Center. And then everything else is white. So, oh, there's a blue sky, very splashy. So who's commissioned this and what's it going to be?
A woman that I've worked with in the past, Adrienne, she's commissioned a diptych. So this is half of the full project, which is two paintings that are 3 feet by 4 feet that feature two different bridges and four different neighborhoods of Portland. And I like to work with ink mostly because there's such a watery quality to it, and that way I can make a nod to the Willamette without having to actually paint in the river itself, and also a nod to our rainy climate. And I've just been building on top of a process that really started by accident when I spilled some really expensive ink on some really expensive watercolor paper, and I had to make something out of it. So it was out of that creative problem solving that I realized I like the looseness of literally throwing ink on a surface and pouring water on top of it and letting the medium have more of a voice and reacting to that voice, and having more of a dialogue so that I'm not in control the whole time, because I need that.
What is this ink you're using?
My favorite brand is FW. It's an acrylic-based ink, so it has a great opacity. But I'm always playing around with whatever inks I can find at different art stores. I'm curious about how different inks react to water and alcohol. But I would say my comfort zone is definitely FW because I've been working with it for a decade and I feel like I've gotten to know it the best.
Mm-hmm. So it's water soluble. Does it dry quickly?
Not terribly quickly, but I like that because I'll pick up the page or the canvas when it's half dry to let the ink spills happen without running all the way off the page.
So if somebody's looking around town and they see some of your work, you said it's often cityscapes, right? There's two right there of Seattle. One's a nighttime, the other's a daytime with trees sort of halfway across, and then the drips just go down on the white.
I get commissions mostly of Portland, but I have done Dallas, Texas, Austin, Texas, and then I would say a good portion of my commissions are combining cities with a bridge, Portland and Chicago. I've done Savannah, Georgia, and Australia. So I really like how it's evolved into this new process, working with the people who are commissioning my work. It's more of a collaboration to tell their story through architecture. I always enjoy the opportunity to use my imagination to combine the architectures of different locations and try to make it feel unified.
You're a commercial artist in the sense that you make work and sell it, and it's your living, right? But you went to art school, so tell us your journey, because you went to art school in Oakland, California, and then you transferred to PNCA, but you're from here.
Yeah, I'm from Ashland, Oregon. I went straight out of high school to California College of Art in Oakland, and after a year there, I took a year off to travel around and try to figure out if art was what I really wanted to dedicate myself to. And when I came back, it was pretty clear that that's the only thing that I do consistently that I enjoy. So I wanted to apply to a smaller school in a more affordable location. So I transferred to PNCA in 2006. And then from there, I worked as a waitress and a caterer and just showed my work in restaurants and cafes mostly. And then when I had the ink accident, it changed my work forever and it pushed me out of my comfort zone and kind of showed me a new process and a new voice that I hadn't tapped into before. And that's when my work started selling pretty consistently. And then once that happened, I paid attention and grew my brand through prints and cards, postcards, and smaller originals that I was showing mostly in restaurants that I worked in. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I started making enough consistent income from my wholesale accounts and leasing my images to greeting card companies and different streams of revenue, then I could quit my restaurant job and focus more on larger projects, getting into murals and commissions. And I did the Saturday market for a year and a half, and like the night market and just different street markets around town to kind of get my name out there, until I opened this storefront in 2019.
What kind of business of art education did you get in art school?
I hope that it's changed since I went to college, because it seems unfair to ask young people to invest their money into a program that isn't truly setting them up for the reality of being a small business owner, because that's what every artist has to be. You have to promote yourself. You have to put yourself out there. You have to understand how to advocate for yourself, how to talk about your work, how to reach a customer base. And understand what you're trying to communicate. And I wasn't challenged or offered any sort of education in the business side of art. I had to learn that all by trial and error. Mm-hmm. And that's a big reason why I want to start a collective, is I want to share my 8 years of trial and error and help emerging artists advocate for themselves, sell their work, and support their practice through patronage and figuring out how to best participate in the commercial arena so that they can make money.
What about the idea that you get pigeonholed into one thing, like just inky bridges, you know?
I mean, that is something that nobody told me in art school, is that a part of being a full-time artist is people rarely want to pay you for something they don't already see. They don't want to be the first person to let me run wild with my imagination and do what feels fun to me. I mean, they're spending their money, and I understand for good reason people are protective of their money and they want to know what they're getting, and that attitude perpetuates and grows with I feel really fortunate that I have an established brand that consistently brings in work of a similar nature. But if I didn't have the love of my particular process and the investigation of the medium itself and just loving ink and the unpredictability of it, I think it would be really hard to, after 10 years, get one more Fremont Bridge commission. I still enjoy being surprised by the medium.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ursula Barton. She is the owner of Jailbreak Studios, which is becoming a collective. It's at 910 Southeast Taylor. And let's look around the store, Ursula, because it's a retail space too. So what are you offering to these 18 artists who are going to be part of your collective?
We are going to have two separate offerings depending on what the artist, what medium the artist is working within. So for our two-dimensional artists, they get one solo show in our gallery every 18 months. And for our makers, they'll get to use the space as their own pop-up shop seasonally. So 4 times a year to promote a new object, a new line. And also on top of that, this space is really flexible. We've taught art classes here. We've hosted events like poetry reading, stand-up comedy, and there's just a lot of potential of utilizing this space as a venue and as a classroom. So all of the members will get an opportunity to teach their own art classes, to host private events or public events. And then we have a digital resource room where all of the members can use our Lightbox and professional lighting studio to document their work and promote it online.
So these makers can come in and sort of put the final touches on their retail effort. Is that what you're saying? You can take good pictures of your art and then stick it on the web.
Yeah, the concept is to share resources so that emerging artists can really utilize the tools we have to bring their brand to the next level of professionalism so that they can really start to make those decisions for themselves, how they want to put their objects out into the world, and do it well and do it with a professional look.
You have a rack of clothing here. There's these beautiful objects. One is a series of T-shirts. They're blue and white. So someone's taken the cyanotype process, which is old photography where you just put a flower down on a piece of paper in the sun and the developer becomes blue. And then there's another piece, there's a bandana where the edges are all, they have these ghostly plant patterns, you know. That's exactly what they did, was put plants on fabric. So who are these two makers?
Our cyanotape artists are Nicholas Carl and Catherine T. Jacobs. Nicholas Carl mostly focuses on the male nude, and we have mostly his clothing line of cyanotyped recycled clothing. And then Catherine T. Jacobs, she makes bandanas as well as hand stitches on top of her cyanotype prints on linen. So she has some two-dimensional original artwork where she incorporates fabric into the photo process, but she also uses the cyanotype process on watercolor paper as well, with a 4x5 negative of her photo work.
Another artist that you're really into is Lara Russ, R-O-U-S-S-C. She does collage. They remind me of our own Ava Lake's collage. Ava used to present Art Focus before I did. And these are like magazine-based color collages, mostly featuring people. And then Lara doesn't just sell the one-off, she reproduces them as stickers and as postcards and all sorts of things. So just tell us, who is Lara?
Lara is actually one of the founding members of our collective, and we're so lucky to have her, as because I think her voice is so unique. I personally responded to her sense of humor immediately. She has this cheeky vibe that is playful and sometimes a little dark, but that's definitely my sense of humor. And I found her on Instagram almost 2 years ago, and it was a hobby for her, and I wanted to work with her because she had a voice and she had a story, and she has a very skilled eye for combining perspectives and create a unifying image from multiple perspectives from with her collage. And something that I'm really passionate about is reproduction, because it opens up different price points, and I have always had a hard time with the elitism of the art world and making it impossible for people of a certain socioeconomic background to participate in owning meaningful works of art. So I work with all of the artists here to develop reproductions of their work as a focus of making their artwork inclusive, I guess, so that a lot of different people can enjoy her voice and her work as an artist. So when she started showing at Jailbreak and selling here, she started scanning her work and working with a local printer to come up with her archival prints and sticker collection. And now she has a collage kit, and she's really taking to this growth well. She's one of our top sellers in the store. And I think that has a lot to do with her variety of price points, and as well as she knows who she is, and she communicates her voice consistently and with a high level of quality.
Jonathan Hanisitz has a spot on the wall. These are prints, so there's like three Britneys, three different periods of Britney. There's Madonna as a some kind of dinosaur, you know, the ones with the little hands, T-Rex, I think. Freddie Mercury as a zebra. Who's that, RuPaul?
Yeah.
As a giraffe. Who is Jonathan?
Jonathan is another founding member of the Artist Collective, and I've been working with him he was one of the first artists who joined the store as well as a consigner. I love his work too. I guess I'm always drawn to sense of humor. I think art is a really powerful tool to kind of pull you out of the mundane with humor, and he uses that as well.
These are prints, like an extra large one is maybe 2x. These are screen prints, mostly 3-color, but they're under $100. Where does he do his printing, and you know what's the limitations of this?
Well, Jonathan actually just became the president of his screen print studio space. It's in North Portland, I believe. So he's been a part of the screen printing community here in Portland for many years, and has a great studio of his own. And he uses a lot of different methods, and part of what I really respect about his process is he's always pushing himself to experiment within his medium of screen printing. So he'll use split fountain a lot in his work, which I like because that gives a uniqueness to each print because the colors blend on the page itself.
Split fountain?
Split fountain, yeah. So he'll create the side fountain with multiple colors, and then when he uses the squeegee to pull it across the screen, the colors blend on the page. And I love this technique because it does have a uniqueness and unpredictability about it, and a lot of his work has that specialness to it.
So this store is it's kind of like a gift shop, right? If you're a tourist, you'd come here and you'd be like, oh, all these cool Portland things. Never see these anywhere else, you know. So this is the kind of original work. It's kind of like people might throw this out on Twitter, you know, as a funny slogan, or on Instagram. But people are creating these in the real world and selling them, and then maybe putting them online to sell more. Just tell us a bit about the gallery side of this, because it's a shop, but you do run it as a gallery too.
Yeah, we have a gallery wall. As soon as you walk into the space, there's a narrow hallway, and one side is a full wall dedicated to our artists of the month. So like I said, a part of the membership is you get a solo show in our gallery for a full month to be the featured artist. And this gallery was built when I originally started the Female Artist Collective out of this space with three of my friends in 2013. We created this gallery wall to start having First Friday parties and creating a platform for local artists to show their work. And the First Friday parties are probably one of my favorite events that we host, and it's a great turnout. It's a wonderful way to welcome the community into the space, to interact with art without having the expectation to buy anything, or because we have a storefront in the larger room, if you can't afford a $500 original but you want to support a local artist, we have, you know, $17 magnets and $20 prints available from 50 local emerging artists. And I wanted that dichotomy of price point in order to be as inclusive as possible while also allowing the artists in the space to showcase their work in many different manners. Like if they want to show the originals that they've poured a lot of time and energy into, and there's only one like it, they deserve an opportunity to showcase that for a higher price point, and also with a level of elevation from our more storefront vibe.
So we have to talk about this show. So you come in and there's just a whole wall of the little mini Polaroids. It's called the Body Project, and it's basically loads of naked people. It looks like the naked bike ride, that kind of view of the body where there's no rules, you know, you be however you want. The lighting in most of them is terrible, you know, it's like flash lighting, dark backgrounds. And what was the idea of these, everyone doing a nude selfie?
She's been working on this since 2015, so this is a collection from a few different groups.
What's her name?
Shelby Schroeder is the artist, and so for our group, there was, I believe, 10 of us, and we all agreed to take one nude selfie Polaroid a day for 2 months, and we met once a week on Mondays to discuss. We were meeting over Zoom, so there were artists from different, or there were participants, some of them were artists, from several different cities and places. And so we would meet over Zoom and discuss how this project is affecting our relationship to our bodies, and to discuss our experience with the ritual of taking one nude picture of yourself with a Polaroid camera where you can't edit. And I really enjoyed the whole process.
In the racks, you have these prints that were made by someone who works sanitation, and they were using found paper and then, you know, doing designs on that. And you came along.
I definitely wanted to work with Tenya on creating an opportunity to reproduce their work. They use a lot of mixed media. They started with ballpoint pen, consistent repetition of tiny mark making, and it's been really rewarding to watch as Tenya's grown into more symbolic visual language. And there's a stream of consciousness and authenticity to their work that I've really believe in.
So these are brightly colored patterns with sort of rainbows and hands and eyes and snakes all kind of balanced together in the middle of a page, which has white, a lot of white around the edges. And you took that and then scanned it and then printed it on a sort of better kind of white paper to make it more, you know, marketable. Yeah, I really like what you're doing. It's helping artists just get over that hurdle so they can make some income and keep going in what they love.
Yeah, I don't think that it's fair to set the bar for artists to be a full-time artist or you're a failure. Like, I think that there can be a lot of different steps of even just if you can consistently reinvest in your own art practice.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ursula Barton. She's one of the founders of Jailbreak Studios, which is now becoming a collective. Jailbreak is at 910 Southeast Taylor in the Central East Side and on Instagram as JailbreakPDX. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus in person, Ursula.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hang him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 3 de agosto del 2021. Estados Unidos finalmente ha alcanzado el objetivo de la administración Biden de administrar vacunas COVID-19 al 70% de los adultos estadounidenses un mes después de lo esperado. La cifra se produjo cuando Estados Unidos informó de más de 135 mil nuevos casos, la mayor cantidad de infecciones diarias desde febrero. El lunes, el gobernador de Luisiana, John Bel Edwards, volvió a imponer un mandato de la utilización de mascarillas en todo el estado, ya que su estado estableció un récord de nuevas infecciones y los hospitales se abrumaron con pacientes de COVID.